Episode 4, Indoor Cycling is Hot. One of the obvious disadvantages of training indoors is that it can be hot. And not only can this make your riding uncomfortable, but it can also impact your performance, in some cases by as much as 30% or more. But there are steps you can take to ensure your riding is more comfortable and efficient. To understand how a cyclist can cope in the heat, I decided to test the recommendations our sports scientist Daniel Healy here at Vertigo makes to his pro riders by doing two indoor rides, one with the recommendations and one without. And I was fascinated by what I found. From Vertigo, this is Inside, opening up the professional cycling and sports world, and this week, putting cooling and hydration measures to the test. We also take a look at why cooling your indoor environment is critical to your cycling efficiency and performance. Staying hydrated at all times, even on the days when you're not planning to ride, is super important for performance and comfort in riding and just everyday life. And I started my N equals 1 tests by monitoring my hydration. The monitoring started as soon as I woke up, and the simplest way to do this... Yes, that's me peeing, sorry. The reason monitoring the colour of your urine is the simplest and most effective way to assess my hydration, and by assessing the colour of my first urination and comparing it to a urine colour chart, you know where the starting point for the day is.
Okay, got this urine colour chart here. What's that colour? It's kind of light yellow, I guess, is what you'd call it.
These charts are easy to come by and look simple enough, but are really important. And Daniel used these with the pro teams he worked for.
Urine color charts, that's the most handy and most transportable way of assessing your hydration. You can use specific gravity, and if you're in a lab situation, sure, you can do that and get a very precise measure. But carrying the equipment around is complicated and difficult at times, not to mention expensive, and it's just a cumbersome process. So the urine color chart we've used in professional cycling, in fact, all sports I've worked with when I had my nutrition role in New Zealand. I was responsible for a lot of different Olympic sports, and everyone in the high performance network learnt about the urine color chart. So if you're in a cycling team, if we bring it back to cycling, we used to put the color chart up in the bathrooms in training camps. Really simple, cost-effective measure. And the guys, every time they had to go to the bathroom, would have this chart right in front of them, do a quick check, and monitor, then adjust their hydration status on the fly. It just basically took care of itself.
I started my day in a fairly good place hydration-wise, but even then, there are things that can dehydrate you overnight.
When you sleep, you're losing water to the environment anyway. So there's always going to be mild dehydration. Depending on how hydrated you were before going to bed, that mild dehydration could be a little bit more intense. And then air conditioning accelerates dehydration during sleep as well. So it's a multifactorial event. You wake up, you're most probably going to be dehydrated.
So really, no matter where the colour of your urine sits on the colour chart, you will probably need to follow Daniel's first tip.
Now, the big tip here, and a really good rule of thumb, which also works really neatly for cyclists, is that you take a medium-sized bidon or drink bottle off your bike, 500 to 600 mils, 500 is usually good enough, and try and drink that straight away before you have breakfast. And the idea is you've just checked your urine colour, you drink that significant amount of water, and I say significant because it's enough to overload the kidneys where you'll be forced to urinate again within the hour. And you can do an A-B comparison of what you were when you woke up and the colour that's now coming out. So really simple, really practical. And it's just nice that there's those cycling bottles that are around about the right size.
Before we get to my weigh-in, let's talk about the performance impact from dehydration. For such a small thing, dehydration can actually make or break your performance.
The important thing to note is that the effects of dehydration are not linear. So if you get 1% dehydrated, you're not a set percent in performance decrement. For instance, 2% dehydration is a 10% drop in VO2. That's 2% dehydrated. And it's really easy to become dehydrated when you exercise. And I'll just frame it for you first. A 4% deficit. So remember, 2% dehydrated is 10% lower VO2. 4% dehydration, which is quite significant, is a 27% decrease in your VO2. 27%. So, and you think about how long some of these stage races go, in individual stages in stage races, and how the effects of dehydration can compound if you're not on it before, during, and after each stage. So it's the little things that help top bike riders get through. And I really see being hydrated and being on your hydration status as just a little thing, because it's so easy. There's no training involved. It's just get up in the morning, have that first drink, and then follow your urine colour throughout the rest of the day.
As important as staying hydrated is, this was just the start of the testing process for me. My aim for the next 2 days was to survive 2 one-hour indoor rides. The first, which I'll refer to as Test Ride 1, also known as the Hot Ride, was breaking all of Daniel's indoor riding recommendations. And the second, Test Ride 2, also known as the Cool Ride, I followed all of Daniel's recommendations as closely as possible. To measure the impact of the recommendations in both riding conditions, I used Daniel's guidelines on how to measure my sweat rate, something I was super curious about because I've always been called the gland, as in sweat gland, because I do sweat a lot. This is how Daniel recommends you measure your sweat rate.
So how do we measure sweat rates? For us and people on VeggieGo, it's super easy. Choose one of your favorite training sessions or ride around the Pulseville circuit for 1 hour. Before you do that training ride, weigh yourself. No clothes, jump on the scales, weigh yourself. Then weigh what you're going to train in. That's the bib shorts, jersey, socks, whatever it's going to be. When you're riding, record how much fluid you drink during that training session. Then post-ride, weigh yourself again and weigh your clothes separately. And whatever the difference is, that's your dehydration status. And if any weight loss should be replaced, if it's 1 kilo, then replace that with 1 liter. If it's 2 kilos, hopefully it's not, then replace that with 2 liters. So weigh yourself before and after, weigh your clothes before and after. Look at the differences, factor in how much you drank during that session, and there you have your sweat rate at that particular time, on that particular day, in that particular room, with that temperature and that level of humidity.
As per Daniel's instructions, I started with the all-important weigh-in. And please take note that you're going to hear recordings from both rides blended into one each time we check in on the tests, which it can be a little confusing.
So I'm just weighing myself now, and I'm 69.5.
I'm going to weigh myself now for the second test. And let me just jump on the scales. 69.5 is the number.
Next step is to weigh all of the clothes I'm going to be using. So what I'm actually going to be riding in this heat test, is a jersey, Knicks. I've got socks. I've got a hat as well, and I'm going to weigh my towel that I wipe off with. And that comes to 0.5 kilogram. Huh, that's pretty good.
And now I'm going to weigh all of the clothes that I'm using. And this time I'm only using socks and Knicks and a towel. And that weighs 0.3 kilograms. I started by weighing myself with no clothes on, sorry for the visual, and also weighing the clothes I was going to wear, and finally measuring out 500 milliliters of water. Then it was time to get riding, and I started by taking the room temperature and my temperature, just via my ear though. I wasn't prepared to take a rectal thermometer for the tests. Sorry.
I'm on the trainer now, and I just wanted to make a couple of quick notes here. The temperature inside of the room is 21.5 degrees Celsius.
I'm on the bike now, as you can hear. And this setup is a little bit different to last time. I'll get pedaling. What I'm doing is actually, I've got things a lot cooler in here, relatively speaking. I've got the window open, so there's a bit of extra noise actually going on. The temperature of the room is 19.5 degrees Celsius.
I've got exactly 500 milliliters of water in my bottle, and I've got everything set up.
I've got one fan in front of me. I'd like to have the extra one on my back, but I don't have an extra one. And I've got just Nix on, no hat. And that's pretty much
what
it.
What I did want
so
to do,
let's start here,
is test my
temperature,
which, so 36.6 is my temperature.
And 36.2 is my starting temperature. So, I'll report back soon.
Before we get to that first room temperature and body temperature report at 15 minutes, it's important to know that sweat is just one byproduct from a complex series of physiological processes that respond to exercising in a hot environment. To understand how a cyclist copes with training in a hot environment, it is worthwhile looking at the limits of body temperature and how they are regulated under normal conditions, starting with core body temperature.
Your target body temperature, core temperature, is 37 degrees, and that's locked within such fine limits. And you think about all the movement that we do during the day. We wake up in the morning, we do a training session on VirtuGo, but then our real life kicks off. So we have breakfast, we go to work, maybe that's by train or by car. We're in the office, we have meetings, we're moving around, then we have to run across town, pick up the kids, come back, and then get dinner ready. So in all of that movement, in all of those different environments, body temperature stays within such tight limits. 36, 37, 38 degrees is where we sit. Mostly. Now, when we're exercising, muscles generate heat, and the heat inside muscles can go up to 41 degrees. And remember, at 42 degrees, you're dead from heat stroke, but that's core temperature. And the heat inside the muscles is transient, and we have our heat removing mechanisms in place. So, of course, we don't die when we exercise. So, it's just interesting to know that muscles can get to that infernal temperature, which is very close to a critical number if it was core temperature. Skin temperature. Skin temperature can be as low as 20 degrees. You could be in an air-conditioned room doing your training session and getting the room set up. You could have goosebumps before you start because it's so cool in that room, and that's totally fine. But that's a lot. That's a big range. We can have skin down at 20. We can have muscles up at 41, yet core temperature stays 36, 37, 38, almost no matter what we do. But it's just a finely tuned machine, the human body and human engine, and just really interesting numbers, I think.
In the hot ride, against Daniel's recommendations, I didn't use a fan and then used one fan in the cool ride. And as any experienced indoor cyclist will tell you, a fan is a non-negotiable for a comfortable ride. But what's the reason a fan is so important?
Please, 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 when you're doing indoor training sessions, put the fan on. And as winter starts to come, I live in the Northern Hemisphere and I'm looking outside and it's completely beautiful. It's normally snowing at this time of year, but I know winter's coming. So a really good tip is to just open the door half an hour or 15 minutes before you go into that room. Yeah, it's going to be cool when you first get on the bike, warm up for 5 minutes, then put the fan on and you should be good to go. And the positioning of the fan is also really important. And this is where some of the nerdy scientific details can help. We have most of our sweat glands positioned on our chest, on our back, on our forehead, and also on our hands. So if you think about that, if the majority, well over half of the millions of sweat glands on our body are chest, back, forehead, and hands. So with that little bit of knowledge, it makes sense to put the fan in front of you. And that simulates a headwind that you would have out on the road, but you're also hitting, or you're having a layer of air go over parts of the body that are actually strategically placed to evaporate heat. A second tip, a subset of the fan, would be to have another fan at the back. And I've only come to this way of thinking very recently. If you're doing a session that's over an hour, having a fan at the back of you would also be a really good move because we have a large number of sweat glands on our back as well. So just they're handy tips. It's nice when science that sort of meets some practical application, and that's to do with the fan. And then, of course, if it's cold outside, lower the temperature in the room.
So I'm missing that second fan, something to try next time. For now, though, let's get to the first check-in to see if anything has changed this early in the ride.
All right, 15 minutes in. Let me just check my temperature again.
Okay, just on 15 minutes now. Quick check-in. Should I better move this fan away? Doesn't interfere. All right, 19.2 degrees Celsius in the room.
36.5.
My temperature, 36.2. And I do want to note that I am considerably less sweaty. I've got the fan in front of me, just touching my face and more of my body. I've done one towel wipe in 15 minutes.
That's interesting. Because I'm sweating like crazy here. My hat's full of sweat already. My whole head is. I'm being very diligent, trying not to drip on the floor so I can collect it all to weigh it later. But let's see what happens in 15 minutes.
So sweat is starting to form in test ride one, the hot ride, and not so much in test ride two, the cool ride. One of the factors that was definitely speeding up my sweat production was wearing a jersey, something I don't think I've actually ever done indoors, even in VO2 max tests. Daniel explains why choosing the right clothes or not wearing certain clothes is super important.
The clothes you wear, it's really obvious. It's so easy to get great looking and great fitting cycling clothes these days. They've all got fancy materials in them that wick water off the body and help heat transfer to the environment. So that's not hard in this modern day. What is still bewildering at times, and again, I look at these things on social media, I see sweat pools on the floor, and then you see what the person was wearing. Long arms indoors is not necessary. It's very simple. Put your Knicks on. You don't even need to have a shirt.
Well, I had a shirt on in the hot ride, and as you will hear in a second, it was part of the reason I was a sweat factory. And the total bummer is that I couldn't even soak up all that sweat with that jersey. But let's check in again.
All right, just coming up to 30 minutes now. It's actually a bit of a full-time job trying to keep the sweat from dripping on the floor. Don't know how good a job I'm doing, but room temperature, 21.6 degrees Celsius.
Okay, well, happen to just be riding up a hill as 30 minutes rolls around. Let's check this out. The room temperature is remaining steady at 19.2 degrees.
Now, let me check my temperature. 37.
36.2.
It's gone up just a little bit. Now, I'm going to have my half a banana and keep pushing on.
But overall, I'm feeling much better.
As you heard, I was very busy in the hot ride collecting sweat. But in the cool ride, I'd wiped my face a couple of times and had no visible sweat anywhere on my body. A big player in this has to be the difference in room temperature between the hot ride and the cool ride. And this is all to do with the importance of lowering the humidity in the indoor training space. Something Daniel mentioned when he was talking about fans. In my room, I don't have any close windows by my setup, but I did have a door I could open. And with the temps outside hovering around 10 degrees Celsius for both rides, it was enough to drop the room temperature by 2 degrees Celsius between tests. It didn't seem that this actually impacted how I was feeling at 45 minutes because I actually felt okay and cooled off slightly by this point, even in the hot ride. And my biggest issue was the dreaded wet towel. 45 minutes. Now, everything has sort of settled down a little bit. The biggest pain at the moment is now I'm having to search really hard to find a bit of dry towel to get that satisfying wipe instead of just wiping dirty sweat all over my face. Let's do a check-in. 21.7 degrees in the room.
Room temperature 19.2. My temperature
36.3.
36.2. As you just heard, my body temperatures at this stage were very close at 36.3 and 36.2 degrees Celsius. But that doesn't tell you how hard my body was working to maintain these temps because at 30 minutes, my body temp was 37 and 36.2 degrees. In the hot ride, my body temp had risen, then fallen again, While in the cool ride, my temp had stayed exactly the same. And talking about working harder, body shape plays a role in how hard you are working against heat. And asking the question, what body shape am I, will help you decide what extra steps, if any, you may need to take to control your environment. Personally, I sit at the high end of the moderate, mesotype, somatotype, but here's Daniel explaining a little bit more about different body shapes.
And this gets into somatotypes. And somatotypes by themselves are boring, but when you start looking at how different people look in different parts of the world and then what the environmental conditions are, it gets really, really interesting. So your somatotypes are your endomorphs, ectomorphs, and your mesomorphs. Ectomorph is someone that's tall, long, linear, skinny, small joints, and we all know those people, right? They can eat whatever they want, they still have a six-pack. So after that, you've got your endomorph, which is the opposite end of the spectrum. It's the ectomorph that's been pressed from the head and the feet, and they're round in the middle, generally short in stature, thick joints, and they only have to look at food and they'll put on weight. And then you've got the one that's in the middle. They've got some linearity to them. They could have thick, they could have thin joints, but generally they're muscular. They have a propensity to lose weight when they exercise and put on weight when they don't. So that's the mesomorph. Now, inside those three extremes are all body shapes across the globe. And if we look at the short, stocky individual that has more insulation, it's no surprise that they tend to live or reside or come from cold environments. And the example here is the Inuit. You look at an Eskimo, they're generally not tall and slender. And they've got an insulating layer of body fat because it's cold where they live. Makes sense. Opposite end of the spectrum, you've got the Maasai. Where do they live? In Africa. It's hot and they're tall. So they have very limited insulation, which means when their body's generating heat and it's also hot outside, there's no layer holding in that heat. They can transfer it to the environment and maintain stable core temperature as they go about their daily activities. If you are the short, stocky type, take that into consideration when you're training indoors. I would even go so far as to say if you have that endomorph, the short, squat body shape, invest in that second fan. You're going to be so much more comfortable with the sweat glands on the back and the front of your body working.
Now we get to the end of the test rides and the final check-in. And I will say that the drop in body temperature in the cool ride was a big surprise. While in the hot ride, I returned back to my starting temp.
All right, that's an hour. And I don't feel so bad, actually. I think that overall, I'm not as wet as I thought I would be. There's definitely wetness on my stomach, inside of my legs, and sort of a dampness. Of course, the towel and the cycling cap are completely drenched.
Room temperature, 19.1 degrees Celsius. My temperature. Let's have a look.
But the room temperature is 21.7 degrees Celsius. And I'll just do my temperature.
35.6, wow.
And that's 36.6. Not so bad. Now I'm gonna weigh everything, including myself.
So I dropped 0.6 of a degree in the final check-in for the cool ride. I'm not sure why this might have happened, but it's actually similar to the drop from 30 to 45 minutes in the hot ride. Overall though, I saw a much more consistent body temperature in the cool ride, and even not considering the outcome of the sweat rate measurements, my body must have been working a lot harder to compensate for the hotter environment and body temps. And my final weigh-in?
First up, I'm going to weigh myself. Let's get on the scales here. 68.7 kilograms. Wow. That's already a lot.
It's weigh-in time. Me first. 69.1, 400 grams difference.
And next step here is to weigh everything else.
And now,
all these wet clothes. Let's get it on there. 1 kilogram, so they doubled in weight. And I had about 250 milliliters of water.
Close.
So that goes into the calculation as well.
0.4 of a kilogram, 400 grams. So only an extra 100 grams there. And water-wise, I had a little bit more than the hot test, which it ended up being left with 200 milliliters, so I used 300 milliliters. Now, you might have done the calculations in your head, but before I reveal the difference in my sweat rate, I've got a few comments. Intensity-wise, the test rides were comparable and actually not very hard. Both 60 minutes and the intensity factor averaged 0.75 between the two. If I started to increase the intensity, I believe there would have been a different outcome again. So all things being equal, except for the recommendations, I had approximately half the sweat from adding a fan, taking a jersey and cap off, and opening the door. In numbers, in the hot ride, I lost 1.55 kilograms in weight, and in the cool ride, I lost 0.8 kilograms in weight. Now, the big questions once you have your sweat rate are, is my sweat rate normal? And what to do with this information? Benchmarking low, moderate, or high sweat rates is not as straightforward as it can be because there are a lot of variables involved. If we take a recent study published online on March 22, 2017, that looked at a range of sweat rate data collected in varying sports from approximately 500 athletes, the range of sweat rates in the data was about 0.5 litres per hour to just over 2.5 litres per hour. This seems to be backed up by other sources as a fairly common spread. From here, I would say that
moderate sweat rate is 0.8 to 1.4.
For a healthy adult during prolonged exercise of a reasonable intensity, anything much less than 1 litre per hour would be on the low side, and anything above 2 litres per hour would be considered high. If you're losing over 2.5 litres per hour, then definitely you have a very high sweat rate. As soon as I found out this, I started thinking that the gland is not really such an accurate nickname after all. But what else can I do and not do with the data other than refute a nickname? And again, the answer is not as straightforward as most of us would like it to be. Part of the reason for this is replacing lost fluid during exercise is not as simple as one out equals one in.
If you're at that upper limit, 1.4, you're going to be at a deficit because the most you can drink during exercise, or the most fluid that's going to be released through the small intestine into the blood supply, is 1.2 litres per hour. So if exercise extends hour after hour, you're definitely going to be dehydrated no matter what you do.
This makes it tricky on longer days on the bike, but if you are working indoors for an hour and can limit the sweat losses to under 1.2 litres an hour with Daniel's recommendations, you will have no trouble replacing the water loss. After the ride is a different story. Let your sweat rate guide you and set a rough benchmark for how much sweat you'll likely lose over a period of time at a certain intensity and in a particular set of environmental conditions. And use the 1 kilogram of sweat equals 1 liter of replacement fluid as a guide. And get it into your system as soon as possible. And the fluid type?
What type of fluid should you have at the end of a, let's call it a moderately hard Virtuigo training session with a few focus intervals above threshold. So it's a solid hit out and you were working at certain points. Yes, you should replace with fluid. Yes, water is okay. In fact, there's nothing wrong with water at all. But if you want to replace energy at the same time, and I'm talking about glycogen here, and I use that term above threshold advisedly just before. As soon as you're training above threshold, you're burning glycogen. And if you've had a few excursions for several minutes above threshold, you want that replaced as well. So why not take a sports drink? There's the liquid, and you've also got the glucose that's in there, and mix it up to 500 mils. So you've got, I think there's probably 30 grams of glucose, depending on how you make it up. And ideally, you want 60 grams, but it's up to you. It's going to be based on taste. Some people don't like sweet after training. I would strongly recommend people do have sweet, and the optimal amount is 60 grams of carbohydrate in solution, but that can be a pretty big drink after you've just trained. So water's good because it's going to get you back on your hydration, a rehydration pathway, but a sports drink with 30 to 60 grams of carbohydrate in it is even better because you're placing glycogen at the same time as fluid. And the replacement of glycogen is time sensitive. The quicker you can get carbohydrate down into muscle, the quicker it's going to be converted into glycogen by an enzyme down there called glycogen synthase active form 1. And we could do a whole podcast on just that pathway right there. But that enzyme is really busy. It's looking for glucose, or it's looking for carbohydrate to fall from above for the first 30 minutes after exercise. So if you can feed it, it'll then do its job laying down glycogen so that if you train the next day, you can lay down the power a threshold to VO2 watts because you've got the fuel.
Inside is produced by Vertigo and hosted by me, Damien Roos. If you enjoyed the show and you want to hear more, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and tell your riding buddies. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode or out on the road.